Hello, Dr. Saeed. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is such a huge honor. Thank you.
Stop it. Yeah. I'm happy that we've connected. And I don't know how. I mean, we've talked before, but I don't know. I've never interviewed you before, which is strange. So I think that it's long overdue and I'm excited for it. And I'm going to interview you about you and also about your amazing kids who have a podcast far more popular than mine or most people's that I know. So before we get into that, I'm curious just a little bit about your backstory. Now, you're about to publish your 10th book. I just found out it was 10. I knew you had a lot. I didn't know it was 10. And your kids are about to publish their first book this year. Do they work on it as a team?
Yep. Team approach. Okay.
So lots of books. You've done some TV, radio stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And really just passionate about whole family health, I would call it. And I'm curious, did you grow up with that interest and intention?
Because my parents immigrated from Pakistan, so they had really no family here. And they were just trying to keep their heads above water, just with this new culture, new world, new way of working things. And my mom loved to cook, and for her, food was love. But also then the junk food crept into the house because she's, oh, I can get coupons. I can use coupons to buy all these things that my kids love. And I remember we had an entire basement closet that was packed. Like it was like a grocery store of all the cereals of every kind. And we would just go down there. We're like, oh, we're eating diverse today. Check this out. So that's what we would do. We would
take a diverse grouping of sugar cereals.
Yeah. But with that came severe digestive issues, acne, eczema, severe alopecia, hormonal imbalances, weight gain. And I was told that it was just my new normal. I just have to live like this. So I suffered with that for quite some time. In residency is really when they all really came to a hit. Head. So it was like, obviously, I was a new mom, a new wife, a new resident, all at the same time. My husband and I were both working 80-hour work weeks. And wow. Now we had this new baby in the mix, and we were far away from family. So it was just a lot at once. And then when that, being married to somebody in the medical profession, that's,
yeah, it's chaotic.
It's like high stress, like high toxic levels. You're not sleeping. You're
like how unhealthy the health professions can be. And oh. I'm talking about like people don't know. I know some insider info being married to a nurse who spent time in hospitals, like what doctors go through as far as when they don't just go to school and then go be a doctor however they want. The residency and the things that they would do, she would come home from the ER and be like, I just was working with a doctor who'd been working for 34 hours. And that was in the ER. Like, if I have a health emergency, I don't want somebody taking care of me that's been awake for 30 hours, but the stuff is insane. And then I was learning all of this like functional health stuff. And I'm like, don't they know that being under fluorescent lights for 30 hours straight or et cetera, insert random things she would come home and talk about. And I would be like, oh my God.
Absolutely. Right? And we got free food at the cafeteria. So now you just add on all that craziness with the free food. We were eating Ben and Jerry's every night just to keep by, right? Just to keep like our eyes awake and all that sugar and the caffeine and the starches. Not good. And so I had shingles in residency, that I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's. I had severe fatigue and then rashes, all these weird joint pain. And then I was diagnosed with lupus with like seriously high ANAs. And I was told, sorry, this is again your new normal. There's nothing you can do to fix this. But again, just trying to keep my head above water. I listened to them and I just did what they told me to do until one day my hamster wheel that I was on came to an abrupt stop. And I walked into every mother's worst nightmare because my husband had a noon conference. He had this gut inclination. He goes, can you go check up on our baby in daycare? And at this time, like daycare was attached to the hospital. We're like, this is amazing. So I walked over there and it was chaos. It was, lights were dimmed. The daycare provider was rocking back and forth in her chair. And the eerie silence was broken by my child in the back. And when I went back there, I saw that my firstborn, arms and legs were tied down with a receiving blanket. Pacifier was in his mouth. His Winnie the Pooh blanket, big Winnie the Pooh blanket, was wrapped around so tightly around his face that he could not breathe. His eyes are bloodshot. His face was swollen. I immediately picked him up and I ran out. And I'm like, you could have killed my child. And she admitted.
Why was that?
This specific infant room head.
Oh, the caretaker did this.
Caretaker did this.
Wow.
Yes.
I thought you were saying like some medical emergency had happened and this is how they were controlling the child.
No, this is how they were controlling the child because she was tired of him crying. I don't know what it was.
Oh, man. But I would lose it.
At that moment, I was like, this is crazy because I went in at 1 o'clock. Normally, I would go in at 5 o'clock after my shift is done, go pick him up. And on that day, God, universe saved my child. And on that day, I made the solemn promise to the universe, to God, that I promise I'm going to take care of these kids the best that I know how. Because I know for sure that was God intervening, like 100% the universe intervening, because there's no way that my husband would have had this gut inclination. Can you go check? I feel like something's wrong. And it was. And because of that promise, I had to take a step back. I'm like, wait, if I don't even know how to take care of myself as a family physician, we are supposed to be the experts in preventive care to try to help people prevent chronic illness. But I had no idea how to take care of my body, let alone what am I going to do to take care of these kids if I don't even know how to take care of myself. And there I started that journey that I needed to, it was like a wake up call, that I needed to figure out what I can do to put my body and brain back into balance so I can, one, we know lupus can eventually kill you, unfortunately, in a lot of situations, but I did not want that disease to progress. And I wanted to be the mother to this child that I could wholeheartedly be, that I knew that I could be. And so that's when I went on this huge rabbit hole of what can I do? What can I do to stop these diseases in its tracks? Because it was Hashimoto's, then it was lupus, then I knew it was something else, and shingles. Already my body was calling out for help. And so I actually, right out of residency, I joined this medical practice where under one roof, there was me, an OBGYN, an internist, an exercise physiologist, nutritionist, counseling, chiropractor, massage, all brought together for the complete healing of the whole person. And that is when it like blew my mind that simple lifestyle things can really make a big difference. And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. These things are not like breaking the bank kinds of things. There's a lot of free things people can do and just incorporate into their lifestyles to optimize their health and wellness. And that's what I have been so passionate about. My first book was called The Holistic RX, Your Guide to Healing Chronic Inflammation and Disease. It's the best of functional, integrative, holistic medicine, covering over 80 conditions, supplements, homeopathics, acupressure points, and aromatherapy for all ages. To give, because if me as a family physician thought this was really complicated, about where am I going to start with this health and wellness journey?
Yeah.
I can't even imagine anybody else. And then when patients come to me, they're of all demographics and they're dealing with lots of problems affecting different organ systems. So where are they going to start? So that's where I put together like a compilation of resources into this one book to help people with hope that there's so much out there that we can do. And then it went to parenting because I started I cut back on my work in the clinic because my husband works 80-hour work week still.
Yeah.
And I cut back in the clinic to raise my children. But then again, as I was raising them, I was learning, I was educating, I was implementing. They were helping me with things. And I wrote a parenting book, 4 other children's books with the kids. I saw that there was no other health book for the Muslim world. So I wrote the first health book for the Muslim world called The Quranic Prescription. It's basically functional medicine, but the food that God gave you, stress manage, all those same stuff, fast, prayer, nature, meditation, breathing. And now I'm writing. And then because it's the kids then started a podcast, because remember, I've been like slowly integrating it into their lives and helping them educate themselves. And then they started a pod. When the pandemic hit, I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So then my mission really turned to our mission. And they were already excited about this because we've been taught, these are the conversations that we would have. And they've done 175 episodes of their podcast. Because of that, they got a book deal called The Teen Health Revolution. And I just signed my 10th book deal. I'm working on that book, Changing the Food System for the Entire Muslim World. Basically, it's redefining halal eating.
Interesting.
I know. So I'm all over the place.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff. And it seems to all have stemmed from the incident with your child and your own health kind of collapsing and being like, this isn't the way. Like, this isn't going to work like this. And I think it's really difficult. MDs that come over to the integrative functional side, people don't realize how difficult that is to do because there's so much invested in that. Like in that model, I don't even say model, like career trajectory. And you have to learn how to have a practice on your own. You have to learn how to become an entrepreneur. You have to learn how to do marketing. You have to learn all these things that they don't teach.
They don't teach it.
In medical school, where if you just land in a hospital or you land in some insurance-fed office that's going to bring patients all the time, it's not a skill set that you get taught in medical school. And
no, we do not. And so unfortunately,
go ahead.
I just want to add that unfortunately, most doctors, when they come out of medical school, are drowning in debt.
Yeah, I thought I was astonished when I met her, what her student loans were just from nursing. And then I was like, what? I thought I had a lot. And then hers was like triple mine. And then she said, I just talked to a doctor yesterday in the ER and his were three times mine. And I was like, that's like a house. That's like a mortgage payment. That's a house. Like you just, that's a whole house worth of debt. And so the option of walking away from the salary of what is the thing that a lot of them realize they don't really want to do is impossible, or at least it feels impossible. And so then that has to have its own just drain on the system and on the energy and on like your life in every way to be knowing, I don't want to do this, but I have to do this, but I want to do good because I got into this to help people. And now so it's this thing. So I just want to credit you for being bold enough to take that step, even though I don't know what's going to happen if I do this, because lupus is no joke. Like it was really scary when my wife got a lupus diagnosis and her aunt passed away from complications of painkillers that were prescribed because of lupus, but she wouldn't have been on them if it wasn't for the lupus. Like, so it was really the lupus, but over time, narcotic painkillers cause a lot of problems. So, but then I've witnessed the pain of lupus firsthand. Like I've witnessed the pain that my wife was in for months, and it was excruciating to watch, and I can't imagine to go through. So what were the first kind of needle movers for you with your own health? Like you mentioned that there's so many different levers and that there's things that are free. And for Mira, when we talked was like 5 years ago and she was in a flare and I was desperately trying to talk to anybody who had lupus or knew anything about it or anything. And then the thing that shifted the needle the most for her was we started working with Dr. Eric Gordon, who's in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he works with a lot of like complex Lyme and mold and mast cell kind of folks. And our first appointment with him was like 2 hours long, which was the first time any of her doctors had done that. And then he said, we got to get you off work. And he was going to write a thing that was going to get her disability for 8 weeks or something, like off work. And this was during COVID. She's in an ER. Like work was
Oh my God,
work was like not normal, even though the ER is like insane to begin with. The COVID ER with like the tents outside and the separate lines and she'd have to come home and strip down, put the stuff in the washing machine, go take a really hot shower, sterilize everything and not be around the rest of the house. Like all of that was in place. And so when he told her, you're going to get off work for 8 weeks and I'll fill out those papers, the next day, her pain dropped by half. Like, she hadn't even started doing any of the things yet. She was already doing a lot of stuff, but we were going to implement some new stuff. Hadn't done it yet. She hadn't even missed a day of work yet. Like, she wasn't even scheduled to work that day. So her break hadn't even started yet. Just the knowing that there was going to be a break and that someone had seen her, pain was in half. Can you speak to that at all, or that kind of shift for people?
Oh my God, yes. It's that hope. And I feel like in the medical profession, and it happens all the time when you have these autoimmune conditions, just look at what we do for cancer. We basically strip the person of hope and we say, this is the only thing that you can do. And this is the only thing that's going to save your life. So forget everything else. Forget the way you're eating. Forget anything else. It's this fear-based medicine that keeps these patients on this hamster wheel, because that fear, that negative energy keeps people sick and wanting help. And then they see their doctor as the only savior. That unfortunately, what they don't understand is that the doctors they have to see, like, for example, my husband has to see 110 patients a week for our paycheck not to go half. And it's just, we get paid for how many patients we see, not how many patients we heal. So why would we want to give somebody the tools?
2 hours.
Or anything else besides for just a medicine. If we prescribe somebody a medicine, our medical complexity increases. So therefore we can charge more and bill more for that patient visit for spending less time. But that's what when I was in residency and I was going through that, I felt a lack of hope. When I was dealing with these chronic conditions, I was like, no one is listening to me. They're still treating me like a number and a patient. And I'm just going to put you down this protocol. No, I am my own individual self. What are my root causes are different than someone else's. But that lack of hope keeps somebody down into that downward spiral. And I started in residency. Because already this lack of hope, it just didn't make any sense to me. And so I started a residency, the focus of gratitude and positivity. Because our subconscious governs about 90% of our thoughts and actions, and studies have proven that positivity and hope is one of the most powerful things that you can do, because your perspective can either be your pain or your perspective can be your power. And so once I was able to change my subconscious from, instead of thinking negative and being on that hopelessness cycle, and change it to a cycle of hope, I naturally lowered some like cortisol, you optimize your hormone levels, your body starts to work better. We talk a lot about heart rate variability, and HeartMath has done all of these amazing studies where—
Super cool.
Yes, yeah. Where if you live a life of appreciation, your heart rate variability is a nice sine wave. When you live a life of irritation and agitation, those negative feelings, your heart rate variability is like all over the place. And so just by incorporating hope, just by incorporating positivity into our everyday daily routine. And what you said, what moved the needle for me?
Just that she was going to get 8 weeks off work and was going to be able to rest. And that the doctor said, you can't be going there and doing that like right now. That's so bad for you. Her conventional rheumatologist wouldn't sign those papers and told her there's no studies that show that time off work helps an autoimmune condition.
See, that's ridiculous.
And that you're going to have to take these medications and you're going to be taking them forever and you're going to get progressively worse.
And so that's what also moved the needle for me too. It's that power of gratitude, the power of possibilities, the power of hope, that there's so much that we can do. And that's when I started feeling better myself, I'm like, that's what I want to provide the patients. I want to show them there's so much hope. And that's what I wrote in my first book, was to give people that hope back, that there's so much that we can do. We just need to find your underlying root cause that's leading to the metabolic dysfunctions, that's leading to the chronic inflammation, that's leading to the oxidative stress that's causing these other things. But let's look at your digestive health, your detoxification, your stress, sleep, social, spiritual. But it first and foremost starts with gratitude. You can be on, and over the last 16 years of me practicing integrative holistic functional medicine, the one piece of the puzzle that I feel is the most effective. You can be on the strongest diet, you could be running every day, whatever it is, weightlifting, you can be sleeping. But if you are pessimistic, if you are waking up on the wrong side of the bed every day, if you're focusing on all the things that are going wrong in our lives, you're not going to get better. And that's where bringing back that positivity. And actually, we live in a world today where we live in a world of negativity. Because guess what? You can't buy the next iPhone until they make you feel miserable about the one that you have to. So the way that they make money is for us to be, you know, addicted to the fact that we're not
happy with the things we have or feeling.
So we have to consciously change our subconscious from instead of thinking negative all the time to thinking positive. And that is the biggest thing that if your listeners are, you know, wanting to start something today, it is immediately when you wake up in the morning, say 10 things that you are thankful for every day. That is one of the most powerful pieces that you can add to your everyday daily routine in this new year to optimize your physical, mental, emotional, psychological, and spiritual.
That's great advice. And I, right before we came on, I was recording with Dr. Christina Bjorndal. She said to say hi, by the way. And
I love her.
She was talking about the body's psychoneuroimmunology and the way that it responds on a biochemical level to thoughts. And she was talking about like harsh inner critic, which is something she struggled with a lot, and that people often have this negative self-talk. They say really harsh things to themselves that they wouldn't say to other people, that like they're harsher to themselves. And even the things they say out loud about themselves often are pretty harsh. And that's like the censored version. If somebody's saying harsh things about themselves out loud, what's going on in their head is even probably more strong. And she was talking about like the biochemical reactions to those kind of things, and that they create neuropeptides and it does all these other hormonal and neurotransmitter shifts. And it's they didn't eat anything, they didn't do anything, they didn't take anything, they didn't go anywhere. It was literally, you could just sit there and think something and it produces this physiological response. And I don't think a lot of people really understand that or know that. And even in functional medicine, it's not really talked about very much. And I want to shift gears just a little bit. I appreciate that. And I'm glad that you shared that. And I think it's awesome advice, because it was like, we had tried thousands of dollars worth of stuff with Mira and tons of interventions and tons of dietary things and supplements and treatments and therapies. And literally the thing that moved the needle the most and led towards the eventual remission was getting that time off work. And it wasn't even the rest itself. It started before she even had a day of rest. It was just knowing that rest was possible or coming, or that she could have it. And so call it placebo, call it whatever you want. I don't think we spend enough time studying the placebo effect to figure out, like, instead of negating the drug and being like, oh, that's placebo. Oh, really? Cool. Let's figure out how that works so that we could just do that, because then we don't need the pill. But anyways, I'm curious, you've mentioned your kids a lot, and I know they have the podcast, they have the books. I have a little one. I know that people struggle a lot trying to get kids to implement some of these things, whether it's the mindset stuff or buying into certain things like that, or whether it's eating in a way that's maybe different than some of their peers or doing more practices for their health. If your kids have hosted 170 episodes of a health podcast, I'd say they're pretty bought into the concept of health. But I would guess the biggest step there is modeling, probably, like you being the example. But other than that, How did you get them so interested in health? How did you get them so on board and at such a young age? Like, we talked about it before we went on air. It's easy when you have lupus symptoms and you are crashing and you have pain and you have these things to be like, oh, I don't want to feel like this. But when you're like 9 years old, I don't know. I mean, there's childhood disease, but most 9-year-old kids feel pretty awesome and wouldn't have those same motivations. So how did that happen?
I knew from the very beginning, either we can lead or we can be led. And unfortunately, somebody has to parent this child. And right out of residency, I joined this practice. I was only doing it one day a week. Started learning about all the things I could do. I started educating my kids and really started parenting them holistically, mind, body, soul. Right? Looking at and trying to give them the tools that they need so then when they start to get off balance, they know what it feels like to be off balance. Right? And then give them the tools that they need to implement that right away. So in order to, you talked about role modeling it, right? That is one of the key pieces to role model. Start young. The other main pieces, there are like five pieces altogether, role modeling it, if you educate and empower them, mindfulness, optimize their decision-making, and focus on gratitude. And we could just quickly talk about each one of those. Role modeling it, start young, because the fact that they're at the beginning, their brain cells are all like all over the place. They're unconnected. By the age of 2, this brain wiring has become more complex and, you know, the synaptic pruning has started. So, and then if they live a balanced life, they have balanced brains and connections. If they live an imbalanced life, they have imbalanced brain and connections. And so in starting to incorporate those things that you can do together, for example, creating a family routine, right, together, and then talk to them about why we're doing these certain things. So as you are doing it, talk to them about why you're doing it, right? And have this conversation, like, when I go up, we're going to start with gratitude, right? And why am I doing gratitude? Why don't you try? Let's sing the grateful song. Then I'm going outside for morning sunlight. Let's come outside here. Let's go through the garden. Let's go in this. What we are doing, we should educate our kids about and then get them involved in our everyday daily routines that are healing. Now, the one piece of the puzzle that a lot of even functional medicine practitioners don't talk about is the connection of the joy of eating. So let me tell you. When we are at home, we're focusing on real food, right? Like nutrient-dense, real food, eating the rainbow, lots of spices, power foods, whatever it is, eating real foods. But get what happens when most people, like even functional medicine practitioners, when they go out, let's say they go out to an amusement park, they're like, oh, we're not going to worry about the ingredients. We're not going to worry about the oils. We're going to have fun today. Then they go out to eat. It's like somebody's birthday. Oh, we're not going to worry about the oils. We're not going to worry about the ingredients. We're having fun today. And then on top of that, then they go to, let's say, like on vacation, right? They're like going on vacation. They're eating. Oh, don't worry about the oils. Don't worry about, we're having fun today. So now, similarly, we have taught these children that real food is home food. That's boring. But when we want to have fun, it's the fake food. That fake food is fun. Real food is boring. And so that connection, yes, we're trying to be lenient. And it's like the, oh, my, we're everything in moderation, the 85 whatever rule.
Yeah.
But the thing is, now we have taught these kids that when we're at home is when we're going to worry about our bodies. But when we're out and about, that we don't have to worry about what we're putting in our bodies and what we're doing. And so what kid is going to want to have boring food all the time? They're going to want fun food.
Yeah.
So that role modeling piece is really critical, because of the fact that we need to even bring it in to show them that real food is equals fun food. So let me give you an example of what I do. We just came back from Arizona. We had so much fun. We did Miami, whatever it is. We go to different vacation spots. We saw the Grand Canyon. We found organic restaurants wherever we went. So the kids had this, like, they were looking online. They were looking at different social media sites, whatever, to try to find the organic restaurants in that area. So we're still having fun, but now we are prioritizing real food. And we did. We found so many amazing things. The kids found Sedona Organic Taco Company, right? Whatever it is. But I'm trying to say they've never eaten out of a food truck. And we found an organic food truck that cooked in avocado oil, that everything was organic. And so they were still, so here we're still having fun, but we're prioritizing real food. And now real food is equal to fun food. When we have ice cream, we choose those ice creams that have real ingredients. We're going to have fun today. Let's have ice cream. Fine. But let's find those ones that there's things like there's coconut bliss. There's lots of different things, or cosmic bliss, that they don't use sugar. They use coconut sugar, or we put in honey or whatever it is. They use real ingredients. And you're still having fun. So that is probably one piece that is critical that I feel that has been the biggest change here, is that we don't ever eat fake food. Why? Because of the fact that the kids now know that you can get something equally delicious that is real food. So whatever they want, they can get, but because there's a real food option. And so that thereby they don't feel deprived when they go out there. Like, that's just, they read the ingredients of everything. They say, oh mama, this is all fake stuff. What is red number three? What is red? I'm like, let's go home and research it. They go home and research it. They learn from all these experts, and they're like, no, I don't want to put that in my body. So now I don't even have to really monitor them, because they have taken charge of their own health. We are also not depriving them, because of the fact that everything their hearts desire can be found in a real food version. And so that's where, like, the next steps of educating and empowering the children, that they're to read labels, to show them what is actually going on with the food system, right? To teach them, educate them, and have them figure out what's going on. Because we know that a sick child makes a lot of money. What are all these things that they were putting in our bodies? Educate them, empower them about what they're actually putting in their bodies. And then the next piece of that puzzle is mindfulness. Have them be mindful about how they feel when they're feeling amazing. Like, you have no symptoms, you'll be able to fall asleep easily, right? You're filled with energy, you wake up without difficulties, there's no rashes, you form snakes in the toilet. But as soon as that starts to go off, the kids feel, oh, mama, let me give you an instance. So when my kids were like, I had when he was like 5 years old, one of them was 5 years old. He comes down, he was eating breakfast on his own. And I'm like, saw that he was eating a bowl of sauerkraut. And I was like, why are you eating a bowl of sauerkraut? Just asking. I'm like, what's going on here? And he was like, oh, mama, when I woke up this morning, I felt a little off. Like, I felt more agitated. And so I realized that maybe it was because of the organic sugar that was in the ketchup yesterday from Nana's house that we had. And so I wanted to help my gut bugs. So I'm eating the sauerkraut so then I can help my brain feel better. So can you imagine if the world worked like that? Like, now you have given this child, where normally we would say, oh, if you just feel a little agitated, don't worry about it. It's just normal, normal, normal. No, these kids know what they feel, their very best.
Yeah.
And they're able to now be mindful.
Start putting the pieces together.
Even the smallest amount of differences in their body, in their attitudes, and then giving them the tools that they need, just like we teach a kid to brush their teeth immediately when they wake up in the morning. right? We have now given them, like, as soon as you start to feel off balance, ask yourself, did I sleep okay? Was I agitated? Was there stress? Ask yourself these questions that we as practitioners know to ask, but to incorporate these values and skills to kids when they are really young, because now they can be mindful of even the friendships that they have, the people around them, how the different foods affect their bodies, right? So being that mindfulness piece is super key, if that's a word, but it's really important. And then to really, again, show them, be mindful of, okay, teach them the gut microbiome, teach them about insulin resistance, teach them about how these different foods, how that affects your blood sugar level. I wear a continuous glucose monitor for fun. And so I'll show them, they've actually wanted to try it on too, but like, say, oh my God, look what happened to this food. I ate this gluten-free pizza, but look what happened. It kept my blood sugar elevated for hours.
That's a thing. I think a lot of people think, oh, if this thing is gluten-free or if this thing is organic, then it's definitely a health food and that it's definitely good for me and it definitely would be different for me than eating the other one.
No. And that's the thing. Even those things, you want to teach your kids to be mindful of how it affects their bodies and then optimize their decision making. Because our aim as parents is to give them, to raise human beings that are able to make decisions without you. And so we need to give them full autonomy. And the best way to do that is to cultivate the soil that they're growing up in, because we know that there's two main pieces of decision-making. There's your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala. You need both of these to be working appropriately to make a rational, logical decision. The prefrontal cortex is the adult in the room. The amygdala is the child in the room, fight and flight responses, and you need both of them to be working appropriately. But the thing is, an imbalanced lifestyle disconnects the prefrontal cortex from the amygdala, leading to the limbic system driven decisions, which is us, you against me, irritability, unable to control their actions, unable to control their emotions.
Yeah.
And that's a child that you cannot control. That's very difficult to control. So if we, again, prioritize gratitude, sleep, social, spiritual, mental, emotional, the detoxification, diet, exercise, yeah, then even though they may not be perfect in all of those things every time, but they're thinking about it. And
it's even a priority. It's even like something they notice if they don't do it.
And then on top of that, it helps their brain work logically and rationally. And you can, like, these kids, I can talk to them and have a conversation with them like real human beings. And so, again, one thing that I've always taught my kids is like responsibility. So there's no arguing, there's no fussing. The kids, their bus comes at 7:30 in the morning every day. The dishes are done, the laundry is done, everything is folded. The kids clean the house, they pack their lunches themselves. They've been doing it for the last 6-7 years. They do it all themselves. They come home. So they're now, once you're able to like instill this baseline.
Yeah. It kind of like self-perpetuates.
It self-perpetuates. And on top of that, people are like, how do you write all these books? Because of the fact that my kids are not monsters. They're not like having temper tantrums. There's no hangry episodes. They're not addicted to anything, especially with the food addictions that you're seeing now in kids.
Yeah.
They're not addicted to anything. So it's, and it all comes with, they did it. They're now living that. And so that's where the next piece of the puzzle comes. The last piece is that gratitude piece. Because the kids can be focused on all the things that they don't have. Oh my gosh, I look at all the things that my friends are doing. Look at what I'm doing. So if we can raise children that are positive and grateful, can you imagine? I've just been with a couple of kids that just complain all the time. It literally kills your entire, like, it just drains you as a mom. If you have a child that complains constantly, nonstop, about every little itty bitty thing, and they're never happy, gratitude. Immediately when they wake up in the morning, say 10 things that they're thankful for. Have sticky notes. Count their blessings. start with those. Have them be grateful and one step at a time. And so I think the two main pieces, the takeaways here are gratitude and stock for success, right? Stocking your house so everything in the house, they can eat. Like they can have everything. There's nothing off limits in the house. Now, can you imagine that? Now that decreases the negativity around food 100% almost, because now it's like, there's no stop eating that. It's just go ahead and eat this. Go ahead and eat that. But they're able to listen to themselves and figure out, okay, you know what? This is what my body needs. And we, in our house, we go like, whenever you're hungry, go down the list, vegetables, clean protein, healthy fats, and then have different carbohydrates, keeping it super simple, focusing on eating the rainbow. The kids know, it's fun just to have kids know where their food. My 11-year-old was telling me a story the other day. Oh, mama, like they were saying, oh, look at your disgusting food. And he looks at them, he's, at least I'm not eating pipe cleaner glyphosate. Like he knew the origin of glyphosate. He came up with his own. And then he'll be eating things and he'll be like, oh, mom, I need my glucoraphanin today to increase my sulforaphane, to increase my glutathione. And it's just fun of these, wow, these words. And he's 10 years
old. That's wild.
He's 11. Yes. But the thing is, what empowers them to know that these foods are not just food. These foods are information. They have a purpose. And it's not like I'm just pushing it in their bodies and they're just for, because it's cheaper than the other stuff. No, it's actually, that's not the reason. It is because it's food is information. And we have trillions of biological processes that are occurring in our body every second. And either you're going to put junk in your bodies for junk food, right? Junk foods. And then you're going to have junk emotions and junk kids out, or you're going to put real food in your body for real amazing kids that, wow, I can't even imagine what they're going to be able to accomplish because their brains are working the best they can. Their bodies are working the best they can. And remember, even around the holidays, even when you're out to eat, there's so much that we can do to make real food fun. Just you got to think outside the box.
And yeah, there's so many, I can't even keep track of how many different points in there that I would want to touch, but hearing those things come out of them about glutathione and this, like most kids don't know what glutathione is. Most adults don't know what glutathione is. So that could be transcribed into its own book on how to get kids to do healthy things. So I appreciate that. And where do people go? Where can people go to find you, your books, them, their podcast? What are the links? But I want people to hear it like audibly.
On social media, I'm Holistic Mom MD. I started a social media page with my mother-in-law also called Holistic Urdu MD. But the kid stuff is the Holistic Kid Show, can be found on all platforms, on podcast platforms, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Facebook. And then my books can all be found on Amazon. If you go to my website, they're all, we can navigate you from there. But Amazon has all my books. And then the kids' book, The Teen Health Revolution, Lifestyle Secrets to Optimizing Your Mind, Body, and Soul, is coming out September 2025.
Wow. Okay. Well, you guys have your own publishing house going on over there. I was taking a lot of notes so I can remember all these things and use them with my little one. And I think that that's fantastic. And that you're helping them do that also and getting them so interested and now set on their state, like their trajectory for doing really cool work, helping people be healthy also.
It's all about raising critical thinkers, right? Not just being fed what society wants you to know, but to think outside the box, be mindful, grateful, think outside the box and implement and really be your own.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much. I learned so much. I have all kinds of strategies I just typed up to be doing. So I appreciate the open sharing and good luck with the finalization of the book and their book launch and everything else. And I look forward to connecting soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much.